having your house broken into is bad on a lot of levels. Even when you aren't home at the time, there's always that thought of what if you had been home? Would they still have come in? And if so, what would you have done? What would they have done? Then there's the inconvenience of the cops and the cleanup. And if they take or damage too much, weeks of dealing with the insurance company too. A bunch of bullcrap hassle when all you wanted to do was come home to your life away from the world and find it the way you left it. But the worst part is the sense of wrongness or invasion. And it's not just that someone entered space that was supposed to be safe and just for you. It's that it reminds you of the fact that it can happen anywhere at any time. That no space is truly safe. When I was 23, somebody broke into my apartment. I was pretty broke at the time too, so they didn't get much. But the feeling they left behind stuck. I invested in better locks and doorstop sticks, and when I got my own house, my first big purchase was an alarm system and a set of cameras. Where I live is off the beaten path a little bit, but at the tail end, where it looks like the woods behind the development might eat my house, and the ones down the street before too long. Someone has to work to find me, in other words. And my little piece of quiet really is full of peace and quiet. And then last week, my phone buzzed. Your backyard camera has seen something. I frowned down at the notification. It wasn't the first time I had seen a similar notification from my phone. But other than me, my sister when she visited, or the occasional delivery person, it was rare. I usually went out to meet friends. The mail was delivered down at the street, and the cameras were all set up not to go off at the sight of a passing bug or squirrel. Even rarer was the backyard camera going off. It was fenced in, and it was a rarity that anyone went back there but me. The one time I remembered getting a notification from that camera that wasn't me, it had been a fat possum waddling along the top of the back chain link fence last summer. But this wasn't that. It was a person. Not that I saw them in the footage when I noticed the alert the next morning. No. They kept themselves clearly out of view when lifting the piece of cardboard to the camera. The black marker words printed across the paper swam in and out of focus as the camera adjusted, but I managed to pause it well enough to read them after a couple of tries. We can never meet, so this way, you're not safe. We will come for you. Get gun. Kill him first. I felt my mouth go dry as I scrubbed the video back and watched it over again. There was no sound, but I could see some flicker of movement as the sign was pulled away again. I had a sense that whoever had held it up had ran back to the rear gate and left that way in a hurry. Heart pounding, I went to the back door and looked out. There was no sign of anything misplaced or left behind or... No, wait. The back gate on the fence wasn't latched. It had swung back closed, but not hard enough to latch it. Going out into the yard to pull it closed, I felt the familiar feeling of violation and fear begin crawling up my sides. Each hook nail digging into my ribs as they scuttled up and coiled into my brain. What was this? Some kind of prank or neighborhood kids? I felt a flare of anger at the thought, but some relief too. If it could be explained away as stupid kids, at least it wasn't really anything to worry about. That afternoon, I called the police. And when they sent around a cop an hour later, I had the video already downloaded on a USB stick and had written down the timestamps and everything I saw. The officer was nice enough, but I could tell he wasn't overly concerned. And when I threw out the idea of pranking kids, he happily jumped on the idea with an enthusiastic nod. I thanked him for his time and then went around to all my cameras, making sure they were all adjusted to be at the best angles for any future visitors. Then I went inside, locked all the doors, and waited. I was starting to doze off just after 2 in the morning when I heard my phone chime and jolted awake. Picking it up, I saw the notification. Your backyard camera has seen something. Blood pounding in my ears, I tapped on the notification as I got off the sofa and headed to the back side of the house. The screen lit up with a live feed of the backyard's camera, and I stopped in the middle of the hallway as I realized what I was seeing. It was a smaller person, probably a woman, running away from the camera towards the backyard fence. Following her was a large man wearing a dark blue or black set of overalls. He covered the ground quickly with each long stride, and he managed to grab her hair as she started over the fence. I let out a gasp as I watched him ball up his other hand and strike her once, twice, 3 times in the side of the head before letting her fall bonelessly off the other side of the fence. He clambered over after her, and they both sank into the green-gray murk at the edge of the camera's night vision. I called 911 immediately, and to their credit, they were out there quickly looking for any sign of my intruders. They could tell I was legitimately freaked out, and they spent nearly an hour combing the area for any sign of where the man and woman could have gone. Meanwhile, I had rewound the video to before the notification and watched it again to see what I had missed starting from the middle. Like the first 2 days earlier, for some time it's just the boring backyard at night. Then, without warning, a piece of cardboard slips into the view from below. The writing is worse this time, but I could still read it when I pause the video just right. Gun didn't work. Find another way or run. Do not show them this video or we are lost. The sign is held up for about 10 seconds before a woman comes running into view, being followed by the large man chasing her. It is a woman. I could tell that now. She looks familiar even, though I can't say I've ever... Ma'am? I jumped slightly at the deputy's presence. Shit, you startled me. I'm sorry, what was it that you needed? He smiled. Sorry, ma'am. You mentioned having a video again. Do you still have that? I felt myself hesitate. Why? Why did I want to listen to some strange invader over this guy who seemed nice and willing to help? Yet I already heard myself lying to the deputy, telling him that it didn't back up the video this time. He frowned. Well, that's a shame. It's not that I think it didn't happen. I do. But having proof like that could help us figure out what's happening out here and why. I nodded, and then gave a start as a thought occurred to me. Did you find a sign? A sign? What kind of sign? I blushed a little, nervous I was going to give away too much. Like the first time they had held up a sign to the camera, so I wondered if they had something like that, you know, this time. The deputy stared at me for a moment before shaking his head. No. No sign. Glancing back over the yard, he turned to give me an awkward smile. sorry I'm not more help, but we'll keep looking into this, and we'll be back in touch. And if anything else strange happens, just give us a call, okay? 3 nights later, my camera alerted me again. There was no sign this time, just a single shape running across the backyard near the fence, barely in view. She was looking behind her, but suddenly the large figure appeared out of the murk in front of her and grabbed her by the neck. Her feet were kicking a foot off the ground, and after a few seconds of struggle, she went limp. The large man dropping her to the grass casually before turning towards me, I mean the camera, and walking close enough for me to see their face. It was the hardened and cruel face of an old man, sloped and jutted forehead over two small eyes, and a hook nose that pointed down to a twisted, smirking mouth. A large scar, clearly years old, even in the poor clarity of the camera footage, ran like a lightning bolt down from between his eyes to the bottom edge of his cheek. He stared into the camera, mouthing words that I could not hear, but I still felt in my heart. Maybe it was my imagination, but it seemed like I knew what he was saying and that it was meant for me. Be seeing you. I had taken a sleeping pill the night before, and so I didn't see the video until after 9 the next morning. I called 911 yet again, and this time, it wasn't the nice deputy from before that came to my door. It was him. 20 years younger and without a scar, but it was that towering man from my videos, staring down at me with what felt like contempt as I gasped for air and pushed the door closed to a crack. He asked to come in and take my statement, but I told him no thank you. I had changed my mind. Puffing out a long, irritated breath, he finally wished me a nice day and left. I could hardly breathe or think after I pushed the door shut and locked it. It had been him, right? Much younger and unscarred, but I remembered that face. But he hadn't seemed to recognize me, unless he was a really good actor. I thought about calling 911 again, but what would I tell them? I didn't know what to believe or think, and I was even starting to doubt myself the more I tried to make sense of it all. Maybe I just needed to give it some time, try not to think about it, and see if weird things stopped happening, or I could figure out some explanation for it all. I spent the rest of the day checking the doors and staring out the windows, and by that night I was a nervous wreck. I was locked in the bedroom with the butcher's knife under my pillow. I told myself it was just a precaution to make myself feel better for a night or two. But I don't know that I believed it. I felt like I was trapped in a room filled with gas, every minute making the pressure go as it became harder to breathe. I didn't think I would be able to sleep at all, but at some point, exhaustion took over. I woke up to him on top of me. His weight was crushing the air from my lungs, but the fear and adrenaline was keeping my brain razor sharp, at least for a few seconds more. In the moonlight coming through the window, I could see it was the man who had been at my door leering down at me, one hand over my mouth and nose. The plasticky glint of zip ties were coiled around the fingers of his other hand. He meant to take me, and if I didn't stop him now, we'd be lost. He pinned my right arm with his leg, but not my left, not yet. My hand shot under the pillow and came with a flashing arc of steel that slashed across his face as he rolled off of me and began to howl. I didn't wait for him to recover. I ran through the house, grabbing my purse and getting in my car. And when I turned off the road, I didn't see signs of a patrol car following. I drove throughout the night, not stopping until I was at a hotel the next state over. A half dozen times I almost stopped in some town along the way, ask for help from the police there, or try to find some authority I could trust. But when the world is insane, it's hard to know where to look for sanity. I didn't understand what was happening, and my mind wouldn't settle enough to try to figure it out until I was somewhere safe and got some rest. So I kept driving until I was falling asleep at the wheel. And then I found a room and a bed. There I slept until the middle of the next night. It was my phone's buzz that woke me up. I'd bought a charger at the gas station before reaching the hotel. And in all the time since leaving my house, I hadn't had a call or a message from anyone. Even now, it was an automated notification causing my phone to blink. Your backyard camera has seen something. I wanted to throw my phone across the room, but I forced down the urge. I needed to see, needed to get any information that might help me decide what to do next. So I tapped the notification and watched as the screen filled with the green fairy fire of the camera's night vision. And saw me. The woman looked 15 or 20 years younger, with gaunt cheeks and haunted, half-crazy eyes that rolled wildly as she tried to look at the camera and everywhere around her all at once. But yeah, it was me. Old and terrified and mouthing two words over and over again. No escape. No escape. No escape. I ran again that night, lived off credit cards as I traveled across the country, and then found a small town with small jobs that paid cash. I changed my name, and I never contacted anyone from my old life. It was like a religious conversion, seeing that future vision of myself had changed all my priorities and plans. Now I only wanted to prove that version of myself wrong, to escape and survive. But then, he found me. He always finds me and hurts me. He hunts me and hunts me and hides me away in a place nobody can find. When it first started, he would tell me how no one could ever help me, because he had made a special little pocket to keep me in, that he had learned how to do it when he was little, and now he was strong enough to do it all the time. He is older now than when I had first met him. He was when he found me, even though it had only been a few months since we cut his face open. It had been scarred over for years when I saw him next. He told me that he had to wait until he knew enough to not only keep the pocket open, but to break time. He says that time is a lie, and like many things, I have seen enough to believe him now. The first time I saw him disappear in front of me, I thought it was a trick. It took me a while before I realized it was a crack I could crawl through if I was fast and brave enough. I've escaped him over 30 times and still not as old and crazy as that version of us in the last video. I used to think that he was letting me escape just to toy with me. But I don't think that's it anymore. Whatever he is or can do, he's not a god. He's flawed as well. I think he just has trouble keeping track of all of us. I've followed in his wake as he traveled to other times, but also to other pockets he had made. I've found other versions of us, other timelines where different choices created different paths. At least until he came to visit. He's collecting us, I think. I don't know how he finds us, but he can, every damn time. I've asked him why he wants us so much. It turns out you could only endure so much pain and cruelty and fear before you become brave. He just laughed at first, but then he stopped and seemed to consider the question seriously. He told me that he had never understood why he had his gift, or what he was meant to do with it. That for all that he had seen, he had only been left with more questions than answers. It had made him feel empty and angry, and when he was a younger man, he had taken that out on people he ran across when he thought he would never get caught. And then he met this woman. He was just doing a follow-up to a complaint about people in her backyard. He knew right away he wanted to visit her that night. So that's what he did. And then she slashed him across the face and ran off into the night. That was the first time in years he had felt afraid at all. And he had never been scared like that before. It was that terror and uncertainty that triggered it, he thinks. He instinctively reached out to create a pocket to crawl into and hide from anyone that might come when she got help. But instead, he tumbled into the past. It took months for him to learn to do it again, and years before he could really control it. By then, he knew he was the next thing to God. And the first thing he set about doing was finding us. Not just because we hurt him, though that was part of it. And not just because we triggered his untapped potential, though that played a part too. He said the main reason was because we weren't done helping him. That if he could collect enough of us, he would be able to understand and really see. See God's face before he killed it. He is insane. That's not the point. The point is that he will never stop coming for you, for any of you. I'm not even from your timeline, I don't think, so I'm technically not the future version of you. But the story for all of us is the same. We warn our past selves, it doesn't work. And then he adds another to his collection. Some of us escape and... Oh God. I wonder if that's what he's doing. If he's letting us escape, put out our warnings to our past or other selves, and then harvesting all those different timelines that grow up from those intervening messages. Different choices and paths leading to new crops of victims. I don't know. I don't know if it matters. All I know is that you need to run and be smarter than I was. Keep a small gun and a knife on you at all times. All times. The gun is for him. He's tough, but he's still human. And as he gets older, he's getting slower too. If that doesn't work, well, the knife is for yourself. You think that's insane? I know, because I would think the same thing. But this is why I told you all of this. So you would know I'm you, a version of you, and that you can trust me. You could believe me when I tell you that I've seen the fields where he grows and buries us. Hundreds of holes burrowed into the flesh of the universe. The things in there, well, a blade across the throat would be a mercy if it comes to that. So I'll end it here. Good luck. Stay safe. And I hope I never see you again. Document found tied to a rock outside of a vandalized motel room in rural Oregon. The door had been kicked in, but there were few signs of a struggle and none of theft. The true identity of the woman who had rented the room two nights earlier, or her current whereabouts, remain unknown. The trailer wasn't as empty as we thought. I'm not a huge fan of my current job. A little over a year into the pandemic, I found myself laid off like many others. I didn't love my job at the time, but it paid relatively well. And that pay had allowed me to move out on my own. My degree and experience are all in IT. And while I never had trouble finding work before, Finding a comparable position to my last one had proven harder than I initially hoped. After 6 months of fruitless job hunting and watching my savings account dwindle away, I decided to take a job at the local grocery store just to have enough income to keep myself afloat. And when I say the local grocery store, I really mean it. It's the only one in town, and it's the largest building in the area by a fair margin. Retail work isn't new to me. I worked in a grocery store all throughout college. That said, I certainly wasn't looking forward to returning to it. I didn't like dealing with rude customers all day, and retail middle managers aren't much better in my experience. Luckily, I was hired on for an overnight help in the produce department, which meant I normally didn't have to deal with customers, and I really only see my boss a couple of times a week. To be honest, I barely managed to pay all my bills, and I don't have enough left to put into savings, but I'm making it work. It's far from ideal, but I guess things could be worse. Well, at least, that's what I thought up until a few weeks ago. It was a Wednesday night, and I remember it being unusually cold. My shift started at 9:30 p.m. after the store closes, and I get off at 6 a.m. just before we open. I was expecting a pretty uneventful night, since we didn't have a fresh food delivery on Wednesdays. I clocked in, put in my earbuds, picked out a podcast, and went to work restocking the sales floor. Some people think that being in a dimly lit grocery store after hours is creepy, like one of those liminal spaces. But honestly, I just find it relaxing. There are only a handful of other people working in the store, and none of them in my area. So I pretty much get to do my own thing 99% of the time. A couple of hours into my shift, just as I was about to take my 15-minute break, a call came through on my walkie-talkie clipped to my belt. "Hey, produce department, food truck just got here." Food truck? That was odd. There shouldn't be one tonight. I glanced over the printed order guide on the nearby counter to confirm that nothing was scheduled to be delivered. After a few moments, Jim, the warehouse attendant, called for me on the radio again. I decided to head over and see for myself. As I came into the back room, I could hear Jim arguing with an unknown voice back near the truck docks. I rounded the corner, and I saw him sitting at his desk, frowning at a clipboard while a delivery truck driver stood next to him, shaking his head. Jim was a stout, middle-aged man, with dark gray hair and a near-constant look of shaded apathy on his face. Tonight, that familiar expression seemed to be tingled with a bit of annoyed frustration as well. It didn't take long to realize that he was just as confused as I was as to why we were getting a delivery. "I'm sorry, man, but I don't think this is our truck." Jim looked up at the trucker sympathetically and rubbed the bridge of his nose. "I don't have any record for a delivery tonight, and this shipping manifest doesn't even match up with our location."
"It's gotta be you guys," the elderly trucker protested. "I've been making deliveries for over 30 years, and I know what the hell—"
The truck driver trailed off into a long-winded argument based more on his supposed experience than any actual proof or reasoning as to why the shipment was ours. While that was playing out, I went over to the rear of the trailer, which was already backed up to our dock. I immediately noticed something strange. Our usual delivery trailers were covered in peeling decals advertising our stores along all the required safety verbiage. This trailer looked pristine, like it had just rolled out of the assembly line. You could almost see yourself in the shiny, white painted metal. Beyond that, the outside was almost entirely free of any decals,
signs, or lettering. The only feature at all was in the middle of the roll-up door, just above eye level, the word CAUTION displayed in large black letters. I heard the argument start to wind down behind me. It sounded like we were going to have to unload the product anyways and store it in our coolers, at least until we could talk to our supplier in the morning. Hearing this, I went ahead and reached for the handle to open it up. After lifting it just a few inches, suddenly the door flew open with incredible force as if the huge motor had just kicked into gear. The shrill squeal of metal deafening me, and I actually felt myself get lifted a few inches off of the ground before I let go and fell abruptly onto my stomach. A harsh blast of refrigerated air hit me as it pushed its way out of the trailer and onto the loading dock. I heard Jim and the trucker abruptly stop bickering and began rushing towards me. I sheltered my bare face from the icy wind as they both helped me to my feet. As I dusted the front of my apron off and repeatedly assured them that I was okay, I naturally turned my attention back towards the open trailer. All three of us standing on the dock seemed to stop and stare almost in unison at the puzzling sight now revealed to us. It was empty. Not a single box, crate, or pallet. Nothing but cold, dark metal. Nothing but cold, dark metal and wisps of chilled fog wafting along the barren floor.
What the hell?
The trucker softly mused. Jim glanced back down at his clipboard and started flipping the top page back and forth in his fingers, clearly looking for an answer that none of us had. As I stared into the dark void of the trailer, I felt oddly uncomfortable, like something was just wrong. The hairs on the back of my neck stood up, and I started to feel faint. My fight-or-flight instincts kicked in, and I moved briskly back to the trailer door, grabbed the loop strap handling hanging down, and pulled the door closed in one decisive motion. As soon as I heard the metal slats hit the deck, I flipped the latch and made sure it was secure with a firm stomp of my boot. Jim and the trucker went back to arguing, though this time they seemed more intent on figuring out how an empty, unmarked, and unscheduled truck had made it all the way out to us. I stayed for a bit to listen, but decided to excuse myself after a few minutes when it was clear there was nothing to be gained from the discussion. I still felt odd, and all I wanted to do was get back to work. I went back to the produce section and started filling the apple table. As I piled bags of Honeycrisp and Fuji apples onto the table, I kept reflexively looking around every few minutes at the empty department. I know it sounds cliche, but it felt like I was being watched, like every move I made was being silently judged and evaluated. I tried to shake it off and just focus on my podcast, but it was hopeless. After emptying everything off of my work cart, the table was about 3/4 of the way full. I remembered I still hadn't taken my break, so I decided to go sit down for a bit and clear my thoughts. My 15-minute break lasted closer to 30, another perk of working mostly by myself. As I walked back from the break room, the uneasy feeling returned. I silently cursed at myself for getting so worked up over something so little. Sure, the trailer incident was odd, but there was nothing overtly sinister about a warehouse logistical error. I had almost talked myself back into an uneasy sense of calmness when I reached the apple table, and my stomach dropped once more. It was completely full, almost overflowing, and the spots I already hit were stacked even higher. I stared dumbfounded at the table for at least a few minutes. I tried to convince myself that there wasn't anything off, that I had actually finished filling up the table before my break and just forgotten. It was enough to lower my heart rate just a bit, but I don't think I ever really believed it.
The next few shifts were filled with similar occurrences, tables being filled when I was sure I still had more to do. Going to empty the trash at the end of my shift only to find out that the bin was already empty. Grabbing a mop to clean up a spill, only to find the area spotless once again by the time I returned. Every time I had a new excuse to tell myself. I was just being forgetful. I wasn't getting enough sleep. Someone else must have come over to help out. After almost a week of these strange happenings, I stopped making excuses. I stopped trying to explain it. I found myself in a weird mental space that you might call acceptance. I started cautiously working less each shift, and the work still got done. My boss even commended me on how good the department had been looking when he got in the morning. One night, I didn't even leave the break room. I just sat there watching reruns of the Andy Griffith Show on the ancient flickering TV until my shift was almost over. I walked out to the department just before I left, and sure enough, everything was done. The tables were full, the floors were clean, and even the work log was filled out. As I'm writing this, I haven't actually been to work in over a week. I've just been laying around my house. Suddenly, I find it hard to do anything beyond the bare minimum to keep myself functioning. An intense blanket of lethargy weighs on me every moment I'm awake. Even while I'm eating or walking to the bathroom, I feel I could fall back asleep at any moment. And through all of this, no one at work has called me. I check my hours online, and I'm clocked in and out on time every day. Or someone is, at least. The only communication I've gotten in days was from one of my friends that lives in town. He had texted me a few hours ago asking if everything was okay. He had gone to get some groceries early this morning and had seen me as I was walking out. He waved and called out to me, but got no response. Apparently, I just stared at him blankly and then went back to walking. He saw me. The other me. And now he's here. Or I'm here, I guess. I could see myself through my bedroom window, standing in the front yard, looking back at me. I feel much weaker now than I did this morning. Even weaker than I just felt a few minutes ago when I started writing this. It takes all of my energy and focus just to keep typing. I don't know what he wants, but every time I look away from my computer screen, he seems to be just a bit closer. Sometimes when I close my eyes, I can feel like I'm the one in the yard, and I see myself at my desk, hunched over and shivering. It feels like my own thoughts are slipping away from me. I don't know why, but I think the next time I close my eyes, I won't open them again. Update. I feel better now. No need to worry. I just need to get some rest before work.